right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gentle Healing 3. Good to see you all. I guess I'll just see if anybody else has something they would like to share before I jump in. You know, I take notes all week, so I have a whole bunch of notes. But is there anything that anybody else wants to share or ask? Share or ask? If so, just put up your hand. All right, I'm not seeing anything yet, but you guys know how this goes. If you want to share at all during the hour on anything that we're discussing, you just kind of jump in. Let me pull up my notes then for the week. This week, there were actually a lot of quotes that I thought would be worth going back and looking at those particular quotes. So if you have your Seven Steps book, you're probably going to need that tonight. And the first quote that I wanted to go back and look at is quote 101. Can you guys believe we're in the 100s already? Goes fast, huh? Quote 101 says, and by the way, I want everybody to, again, feel free to share as we look at these quotes. I'm looking at Susan. Is that a puppy behind you, Susan? What a cutie. Just watching it do the little circle thing that dogs do, you know, before they lay down. All right, 101. To see reality is as simple as to see one's face in a mirror. Only the mirror must be clear and true. A quiet mind, undistorted by desires and fears, free from ideas and opinions, clear on all levels, is needed to reflect reality. So I think the reason that particular quote stood out to me is obviously the quotes that we're focusing on now are kind of pointing more towards meditation. But I think that what this quote really points out is the purification phase still needs to continue. Because, you know, it says that we need to be clear on all levels. I think that, you know, the Buddhists have a bad rep. You know, all religions have bad reps for one thing or another. And the Buddhists, not necessarily the, you know, the highest or the clearest Buddhist, but just the average Buddhist on the street. the Buddhists get a bad rep for doing their meditation and then just going out in the world and being all full in the world, getting just as angry as everybody else and, you know, having all the same fears and all the same desires. And I think what this is pointing to is that we need to be more conscious of our true desire than that. We need to be more conscious of the work that we've committed to than that. So when we're not in meditation, when we go out into the world, we still need to be very, very focused on everything that we learned in year one and year two, you know, which allows us to have a clear mind, as clear as possible, as we go about our day. But also when the clarity gets lost because of some upset or some fear or something, we need to practice the skills, the tools that we've learned in year one and year two, like root cause inquiry, rest, accept, and trust, and those things as well. So it's not that we're abandoning those previous practices. It's that we're having a deeper understanding of why all of those things work together, how all of those things work together in order to bring us to awakening. To see reality is as simple as to see one's face in a mirror. Only the mirror must be clear and true. A quiet mind, undistorted by desires and fears, free from ideas and opinions, clear on all levels, is needed to reflect the reality. And again, the opinions thing is always very interesting. You guys probably don't remember this now, but in year one, gentle healing, like it was the third or fourth week, really early, we read in NTI Luke about letting go of our opinions. And yet, I'm sure everybody notices that they have not yet let go of all of their opinions. You know, that is just such an important thing. You know, when we cling to our opinions, we are clinging to our false self. And the way that you can tell that it is true is that if you have one particular opinion and another person has another opinion, you know, so we have two opposing opinions, neither opinion can be truth. Anything that can oppose cannot be true. It is merely opinion, merely point of view. And if you had that person's mind and you were looking through the filter of that person's mind and that person's experience, you would have the exact same opinion they have. It's purely the helmet, you know, the helmet of the false self that's covering everything. And it's interesting because everybody always thinks that they're right about their opinion. But everybody's wrong about that. You know, your opinions are not as right as you think they are. What they are is clinging to your false self, clinging to your values, your experiences, and all of that. So watch opinions. Be willing to drop opinions. And I know one way to really tell that it's an opinion, because sometimes we have an opinion that we don't even notice is an opinion. And a way that you can really tell that it's an opinion is when somebody disagrees with you. If somebody can disagree with you, then it's something worth dropping. That's just a guarantee. If someone can disagree with you, then it's something worth dropping. So to see reality is as simple as to see one's face in a mirror. Only the mirror must be clear and true. A quiet mind, undistorted by desires and fears, free from ideas and opinions, clear on all levels, is needed to reflect the reality. And does anyone else want to share on that quote before we move on to another quote? And again, you can put up your hand or you can just unmute yourself and talk. I really don't care which way it happens. Whatever makes you more comfortable. Okay, then let's move on to 102 then. Realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from the outside. Putting this quote right on top of the previous quote is really powerful. Realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. So another thing that we learned in Gentle Healing Year 1, and I think we reviewed it in Gentle Healing Year 2, was the code. And what we learned in the code is how, you know, as we cast attention on a certain type of energy, a fear energy, an angry energy, you know, a jealous energy, whatever, and believe it, that energy goes into the world and it, you know, paints pictures out there, but it also comes back to you as more story thoughts. And also the story thoughts that come to you are not only coming to you from the energies that you cast attention on, but they're coming to you from the energies that others cast the attention on too. It's really important to realize that what you call your thoughts, what you call your opinions, you know, we'll go back to the opinions specifically, as well as fears and desires, but opinions is a great point. What you call your opinions isn't your opinions. It's just the thoughts that this character is receiving as a part of its character script that's being written by the whole through that process that we call the code. So again, when you think that you are right and you defend your opinions, what you're really saying is, I am this character. And these are my thoughts. I mean, you're claiming all of that. You know, so think about, if you can, if you remember, think about a time, you know, recently when you were in a discussion with someone and you were defending an opinion, or maybe just in thought while watching TV, you were saying, that's not right. You know, this is what's right. You know, see if you can remember a time recently when you've done that. And then just look at that time and realize those thoughts were just received and I claimed them and made them mine, which means I'm claiming to be that false character, which means I'm denying the true self. And look at the power in that. And doesn't it make you kind of want to drop your opinions? And of course, the same thing is true with desires. And the same thing is true with fears, beliefs, any idea, any thought at all. But realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. You know, if you really pause and think about that, you have every right to kind of say no to every thought that shows up. And by no, I mean, no, I'm not interested in that. No, I'm not interested in that. No, I'm not interested in that. Because it's not yours. You have every right to say no to every thought that shows up. And if you feel like a contraction, you know, realize that you have actually just said yes to that thought, or you wouldn't have felt that contraction, right? Just take a breath, kind of release, and then I change my mind. I say no to that, right? I change my mind. I say no to that. Because, you know, the habit of saying yes to these thoughts is very, very, very fast, right? So you won't always be able to catch it before you say yes to a thought. But you can always change your mind. You know, one of my previous jobs was that I was a software trainer. I was a software trainer in the early 90s when a lot of people were getting their first computers. And I remember teaching people about, in Microsoft Word, about that undo button. And everybody's like, oh, that's so cool. Way better than that stuff we have to use in the typewriter. Remember the correct things that we had? Everybody like loved the undo button. But that's, you know, we really have a permanent undo button, right? You may make the mistake. You may say yes to the thought. You may even act on the thought, but the moment you catch yourself doing that, you can wise up and you can choose undo. Never mind. I don't want that. I take it back. I'm not interested in that. Right. And you can do that because they're not your thoughts. Their ideas received from outside of you, and you do not have to acclaim them. Realize that no ideas are your own. They all come to you from outside. The next quote I wanted to look at again was 103. I mean, there's just several here right in a row that I just thought were incredibly powerful. And again, feel free to jump in at any time and jump into the conversation. Reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. Now, that quote is true on many levels. But there's one level in particular that I want to talk about, and that is during meditation. During meditation, when you are sitting doing nothing but looking within with your eyes closed, that is when you have the best chance, although it's not the only opportunity. It is when you have the best chance to at least glimpse, if not realize, the true self. It's what you're focused on. You're not doing anything else at that moment. You know, your body is still. Your eyes are closed. But what the mind will attempt to do, the more and more skilled that you get in meditation, is bring more and more things into your meditation that will distract you right there, just like you're distracted by the outside world. And depending on your personality, what those things are could vary. You know, but certainly there are people who have what seem to be very real experiences of like being visited by light beings or angels, you know, or if you really love Jesus, you could be visited by Jesus during meditation. And spiritual people fall for those kinds of images, hook, line, and sinker. Because how cool is it? You know, like let's say Jesus is the one that you really love. How cool is it to be in meditation and to be visited by Jesus? But you got to look back at this quote. Reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. And I know some people don't like to hear this, but Jesus is a concept. Angels are concepts. Light beings are concepts. Other dimensions are concepts, right? This says reality is not a concept nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. When you are in meditation, and you are looking for reality, looking for the true self, searching for what is true, you need to be willing to say, no, I am not interested, to everything that arises. Or what you could really do is what the yogini did in the story that Muji tells. What the yogini would do when things would arise to her is she would say, what sees this, right? And return her attention to the seer. What sees this? And she would continue to be aware of the fact that without her consciousness, these light beings could not appear, right? That she is actually primary. You see, what happens if, you know, Jesus visits you in meditation, if that's who you adore, that seems like something quite special. And your attention, instead of going back into yourself, goes out into this very special image. And you get all excited and you think something very special is happening. And that's how the ego is distracting you from your search for truth. When you are in contemplation, not meditation, if you still feel more secure asking Jesus or asking the Holy Spirit or something like that for inner wisdom, and you trust the inner wisdom that comes, that's fine. The inner wisdom is actually not coming from Jesus. Or even really a Holy Spirit. But if that's what you're comfortable with, that is 100% okay. So during contemplation, if you feel more connected by saying, dear Jesus, or, you know, whatever, that is okay. But during meditation, you want to ignore all images that arise, all sounds that arise, all thoughts that arise, and seek the truth which is not a manifestation and is not a concept. I think it was Muji I was watching one time when he led people in a meditation, which was a seeking the true self meditation. And afterwards, some guy in the audience put up his hand and said something like, "Oh, I saw this purple light." And I don't remember exactly what Muji said, but the gist of it was not that. That's not it. You know, don't get taken in by the purple light, right? No, right? So reality is not a concept, nor the manifestation of a concept. It has nothing to do with concepts. Anything anyone wants to add to that or ask about that before we move on? Okay, then 104, right in a row. 104, as the mind is made of words and images, so is every reflection in the mind. It covers up reality with verbalization and then complains. Okay, I'm going to share my screen. And I think what I wanted to do with this was to go look at the RDA journal. So we'll run over there. Did you see she got arrested today? She's, I don't know if you guys know her from Full House. Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but I think it's funny. Okay. Step one. And I said we're on 103. Okay, so again, the quote was, reality is not a concept. Oh no, that's 103, we already did that one. I wanna go to 104, sorry about that. As the mind is made of words and images, so is every reflection in the mind. It covers up reality with verbalization and then complains. So this is what I wrote in my journal. Think of mind as the culmination of word thoughts, images, and manifestations experienced. That is all mind. There isn't one word thought, mental image, physical or non-physical manifestation that isn't mind. Define mind in this way, then notice how all-consuming mind appears to be. Take note of the ideas and reflections that are mind, which previously may have been mistaken for my thoughts or world reality. Now ask, who is present, regardless of the thought, image, or manifestation presented? What are they presented to? What is aware of them? What am I? What is constant and what changes? What must be ever-present reality? So obviously, just like we get lost in our opinions, we get lost in the world and we get lost in thought. We literally forget that this is all mind. Now, one word that we often use is the word consciousness. Everything is consciousness, and that is also true. In this context, mind and consciousness are synonymous. By mind, we don't mean the human thinking brain. I And you know, different words mean different things to different people. So what I'm about to say is true for me. But since you listened to my teachings, it might also be true for you, because this would have come across in my teachings. When I say the word consciousness, I think in a way more like God. Like, consciousness is very synonymous with God. So like, if I say, this is consciousness, in that moment, what I'm really contemplating is this is God. This is the light of God. And when I contemplate something as God or as consciousness, this leads to love, which is fine. What I'm going to say is going to seem to contradict each other, so we may have to talk about it if you're confused. When I use the word mind, however, when I say this is mind, what mind means to me is not real. So it's two words that really are talking about the same thing, but those two words have different effects inside of me, if that makes any sense. Like, oh, that's consciousness. You know, I love it. Oh, that's consciousness. I love it. Oh, that's mind. It's not real. When I use the word consciousness, for some reason, it doesn't trigger the not real thought as well. It triggers the loving awe. But one of the things that's really important, and this is called discrimination by most masters, discrimination. One of the things that is really important as we advance in our maturity is that we begin to practice discrimination, which means we begin to continually remind ourselves the difference between what is real and what is not real. You know, so for example, today I took a walk up and around this hill, and I came just to this incredible view. What we have here in La Vida is these gorgeous mountains. But in addition to these mountains, we have these large rock walls. Sometimes one of them is 14 miles long. These beautiful rock walls that are called dikes, volcanic dikes. And I just rounded this corner and I could see the Sangre de Cristos, the Spanish peaks, and three of the largest dikes all in one view. And it was just magnificent. And there's nothing wrong with appreciating the magnificence of that. But it's also helpful to pause, you know, even in awe of that magnificence, and to notice what's mind and what's reality. You know, there's nothing wrong with loving mind. There's nothing wrong with being amazed at the creations of mind. But it's wonderful just to pause and notice that I, this seer, this knower, and the constant reality, and this which I'm looking upon is mind. That's discrimination. And it's especially helpful to do that during meditation. Whatever arises in meditation, you can just look at it and say, that is just mind. You know, what sees this? And in fact, this is what, when we were in the teachings of Inner Ramana, this is what self-inquiry really pointed to. It was, remember, little s self-inquiry and capital S self-inquiry. The purpose of little s self-inquiry was to remember what's mind. And the purpose of capital S self-inquiry was to remember through experience, through looking, not through mental knowledge, but through pausing right now and looking, that I am that which is constant. I am that which is real. You know, that magnificent view that I saw this morning when I rounded that corner up to that hill, and I could just see everything in one glimpse. Again, the Spanish peaks, the Sangre de Cristos, the three major volcanic dikes, all in one view. Nisargadatta would say that view shines in your light, right? That view shines in your light, your awareness. Where if it were not for you, that would not be present. That's discrimination. And so again, quote 104 says, as the mind is made of words and images. And remember, that magnificent view is an image, is it not? As the mind is made of words and images, so is every reflection in the mind. It covers up reality with verbalization and then complains. Now we want to keep in mind that he's talking to a particular person here. This is from I Am That, so we know he was having a conversation with someone. But if I am too taken aback by that gorgeous, gorgeous view, and I forget to pause and practice discrimination, I can even forget in beauty, you know, the beauty of nature, I can forget what's real and what's not real. So again, let me read this journal entry one more time. Think of mind as the culmination of word thoughts, images, and manifestations experienced. That is all mind. There isn't one word thought, mental image, physical or non-physical manifestation that isn't mind. Define mind in this way, then notice how all-consuming mind appears to be. Again, it's really everything that we know, right? Take note of the ideas and reflections that are mind, which previously may have been mistaken for my thoughts or world reality. Now ask, who is present, regardless of the thought, image, or manifestation presented? What are they presented to? What is aware of them? What am I? What is constant? And what changes? What must be ever-present reality? Let me look at my notes and see where we're going next. Anybody have anything they want to say about this quote before we go on? Looks like we're going on to 105. If so, just speak up, because while I'm sharing my screen, go ahead. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that has kind of helped me to distance myself even from beautiful sensual images that we see in nature and other places is first just the intellectual understanding that what we really see isn't even real from a scientific perspective, because that white snow has nothing to do with white. It's the reflection of all colors back at you. The color green of the trees is everything but green, because that's what gets reflected back to you. It's not real. We interpret it as a beautiful image, and I can appreciate that beautiful image, but I know it's not real because it's a manufactured interpretation of what I'm seeing. But then I can also appreciate that the sky or the ether or the space, whatever you want to call it, is the canvas that allows that to be hung and for that to be seen. And that maybe that's a little closer to what isness is. It just allows things to be able to appear, whether they're true images in my interpretation at this point in time or not. Anyway, that's, you know, it was kind of, for a while, I was kind of bummed out. It's kind of like, wait a second, can't I really appreciate a great sunset or, you know, things like that? It's like, no, I can still appreciate it for what it is, but just put it in context.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can still love it, still appreciate it for what it is, put it in context. And that's no different than if you're looking at a beautiful painting. You don't mistake the painting for reality, right? But you can love it. You know, you can say, oh, I love that painting, but, you know, you don't think it's real. You don't think it's reality. You don't think you can step into it like the can in Mary Poppins. By the way, I love the new Mary Poppins too. I don't know if you guys have seen the new Mary Poppins movie, but it's really good. I'm moving on to 105 then, unless somebody else wants to jump in on 104. Okay, so first 105 and the seven steps to awakening. Oh, this is the long one. Questioner. I love, by the way, this is one of my favorite quotes, even though it's really long. How can I break through the barrier and know personally, intimately, what it means to be immutable? Maharaj. The word itself is the bridge. Remember it. Think of it. Explore it. Go round it. Look at it from all directions. Dive into it with earnest perseverance. I'm going to pause right there before I continue. It's interesting because most of what we have been reading has kind of been telling us the words are kind of meaningless. And now suddenly we come along this huge quote that's telling us to remember the words, think of them, explore them, go around them, look at them from all directions, dive into it with earnest perseverance. And of course, he's referring to something different than intellectual knowledge, which is what most of the quotes have been talking about. He's referring to the contemplation. He's referring to look at it, not to learn this stuff and store it in your I know mind, but to really look at these words in order to get a deeper, genuine understanding of what they're pointing to. So the word, this is why we're, if we were supposed to just ignore all words, we wouldn't be spending, you know, a year plus in this book, right? The word itself is the bridge. Remember it, think of it, explore it. Go round it, look at it from all directions, dive into it with earnest perseverance. Endure all delays and disappointments till suddenly the mind turns round. That line is really important for what we're doing because some of you may feel like you really connect every day. Some of you may feel like you're just kind of spitting stuff out of your brain. I don't know how you feel when you're writing in your journals. But notice he says, endure all delays and disappointments till the mind turns round. I can tell you that it's right around 100 in my journal where the contemplation started getting very clear and very deep. Prior to that, my contemplations were okay. Right? They were okay. But starting at 100, something really started happening. Something inside started being seen. And what's coming through has a lot deeper meaning. And it began to change me from the inside, right? But if I had quit after the fifth quote or the 25th quote or the 17th quote or any, pick a number, because, you know, nothing really is happening here. I'm reading stuff and writing stuff and reading stuff and writing stuff. I never would have got to the point where stuff started happening. And it was while contemplating the seven steps later in this first year, it'll be about May, that I realized the four principles of God. You know, that I got this glimpse of the absolute just brief enough to know, oh my God, oh my God. You know, I mean, really to see it. That happened through contemplation. So I love this, endure all delays and disappointments until, you know, he says, until suddenly the mind turns around. I'm going to say until something real begins to happen within you, right? Just keep moving forward. Endure all delays and disappointments till suddenly the mind turns around away from the word towards the reality beyond the word. It is like trying to find a person knowing his name only. A day comes when your inquiries bring you to him and the name becomes reality. Words are valuable, for between the word and its meaning, there is a link. And if one investigates the word assiduously, one crosses beyond the concept into the experience at the root of it. As a matter of fact, such repeated attempts to go beyond the words is what is called meditation. So he's really talking about two different things here. He's talking about contemplation followed by meditation, right? First, you contemplate the word, you look at the word all way, you receive some type of insight, And then you go into the meditation and you go even deeper. So let's look at the journal here, journal entry of 105. Investigation occurs with the mind. Contemplation occurs with the mind. Remembrance of present moment choice occurs with the mind. Like, for example, choosing not to share an opinion, right? Or choosing to take back, you know, that anger you were just now feeling. You know, like undo that, right? Never mind, that wasn't my thought. I don't have to feel that anger. These are all useful practices of mind. Mind also desires the goal and judges the progress. Mind creates the idea I'm awakened and I've slipped backwards, as if ever-present reality is hidden, changing, reachable to be gained, and missable to be lost. These judgments of progress are meaningless. Do not regard them with attention and belief. And that all came from his endure all delays and disappointments, right? Just all judgments that the mind makes about your progress is meaningless. Just disregard it. Instead, stick with the useful practices of mind. Be diligent with these practices. The useful practices of mind are investigation, or what we often call inquiry, contemplation, and at this point, I wrote remembering present moment choice. At this point in my life, I was not yet meditating. But I think that present moment choice still applies in meditation. It's remembering with your eyes closed the present moment choice of continuing to not be distracted, continuing to what sees this? What am I? What's looking at this, right? That's a present moment choice. But it's the mind that you do that with. So what this particular quote is pointing out is that even though we're in a chapter that's telling us ignore words, ignore images, ignore thoughts, the truth is there are some useful practices of mind. And using these useful practices will bring us beyond the mind. I would even say to the destruction of the mind, although not everybody loves those words, but beyond the mind, right? So what the ego sometimes does when people read quotes like the ones we're reading is the ego, you know, makes you think that if you use the mind for inquiry, oh my gosh, this is just the mind, you know, what am I doing here? And in fact, you can even see people questioning, especially Ramana Maharshi, about, but isn't that the mind? And one of the quotes Ramana Maharshi uses, he talks about the stick that you use to stoke the fire that's burning a body, because you know in India, right, they burn the bodies, they cremate the bodies when someone dies. And he talks about you use the stick to stoke the fire so that it burns up the body, meaning you use the thought, like who am I, to stoke the fire that's burning up the mind, right? But and then he says the last thing that you throw into the fire is that stick. So in the end, you'll let go of investigation, you'll let go of contemplation, you'll let go of remembering present moment choice, both in and out of meditation. But don't throw those things away too early, just because the ego is telling you, that's mine, you know? Think of that as the stick that is stoking the fire that is burning up the mind. And use those useful practices until they're no longer needed. Does anybody want to share anything before we move on?
That one word in the paragraph or in what he said that I just really stood out to me was the word assiduous.
Yeah.
I don't really use on a day or monthly or yearly basis at all. Although I'm going to start, I think, using at least for myself, because when I looked it up, it means great, with great care and perseverance. And as it relates to at least, you know, my journey, and I think I can say I've seen this in others too, I just think that's a great description with great care and perseverance.
Yes.
So I just wanted to share that because it really stuck out to me.
Yeah, and many, many people on this day looked up immutable. That was a new word for a lot of people, and they found that it meant changeless, right? But a lot of people were, what's this immutable thing, and looking it up in their journals, so.
Not just changeless, but incapable of change.
Incapable of change, you're right. Incapable of change, yes. All right, so let me look at my notes again. I think we're just going to the next quote, but let me peek and see if that's true. Yeah, 106 and 107, but we're only looking at the RDA journal for 107. So let me get over to 107 and then we'll look at these two quotes. Okay, so 106 in Seven Steps to Awakening. Oh yeah, a lot of people commented on this too because it starts with be careful. That caught everybody's attention, I think. Be careful. The moment you start talking, you create a verbal universe, a universe of words, ideas, concepts, and abstractions, interwoven and interdependent, most wonderfully generating, supporting, and explaining each other, and yet all without essence or substance, mere creations of the mind. Words create words. Reality is silent. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't begun to notice this yet, you will notice this in social situations. You'll notice that when you are with other people and you just kind of forget yourself and you just join in a social conversation and chatter, 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 at some point you'll begin to wonder, oh my God, how did I let myself get so involved in something so meaningless? And it just becomes evident that you just got lost in complete, unnecessary, meaningless chatter. And so, you know, you can see why this quote begins with be careful. It's much better to be a listener than a participator in social chatter. Because we really do lose ourselves in that. And when we lose ourselves in that, what we're doing, again, is reinforcing the character. And that's where this next quote comes in, 107. Once you are beyond the person, you need no words, right? But that's the person that we're reinforcing. So that takes us to my journal entry. The person is the character. Words are script, and by script, I mean, again, they're received. They're not your thoughts. They're not your opinions, right? They're not even your judgments. The person is the character. Words are script. If there is belief that I am the person, there is engagement in the script, in the word thoughts. And there is attachment to expressing the character as if it is real. As if it is who I am and what must be lived. Pay attention to those lines. And notice in social situations that you get caught up in if that isn't true. There is an attachment to expressing the character as if it is real. As if it is who I am and what must be lived. When I see I am not the person, there is no attachment to the script. There is no urge to express it. It is seen as unreal and not important. But if you didn't write down those two lines that I emphasized, you might even want to write them down so that you can watch this when you're in a social situation and check it. So you can refer back to it. Notice, again, the word urge is used down below, but notice there is an urge. There is an attachment to express the character as if it is real. As if it's who I am and what must be lived. And notice how strong that urge is. You know, it's as strong as the urge to smoke tobacco if you do that, or to eat chocolate if you do that, or, you know, anything else that we have these urges. Go grab the potato chips, anything else that we find ourselves succumbing to, watching TV. It's like that. And just notice how strong that is in social situations. And that's really all I'm asking you to do, is to notice it at this point. Because I think a lot of people go into social situations and they just let this take them over without even noticing it. So just begin to notice. There is an attachment to expressing the character as if it is real, as if it is who I am and what must be lived. And as you begin to notice it, you'll also begin to step back from it. Any sharing on 106 and 107? My belly's telling me I forgot to eat. And I did. I did forget to eat. It's right. It's like, rrr. It's absolutely right. All right. So the next thing I wanted to jump over to was 109. So 109 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. The words are most appropriate, but you do not grasp their full import. Go deep into the meaning of the words. Being, living, conscious. And you will stop running in circles, asking questions, but missing answers. So what the journal then says is, contemplation is better than asking questions and trying to understand. Mental attempts to understand, all that thinking, hide the present obvious answer. Contemplation is not thinking or trying to understand. Contemplation is silent diving into the restful, devotional, open heart of the words and their being. Just being in the state of contemplation without seeking to understand or get answers. And that's really what he's encouraging in this quote when he says, go deep into the meaning of the words, right? But I think the main reason I wanted to share this again is because this entire year is really focused on contemplation and hopefully meditation. So it's important that we understand that contemplation isn't done with the thinking mind. It isn't trying to figure out what does this mean. It is being with these words until a meaning begins to arise from within, which is why Michael Langford recommends reading the quote at least 3 times, you know, but, as you read the quote, something may begin to come. And then what you want to do is explore that something by beginning to write it down and see where it goes. So contemplation is not thinking or trying to understand. Contemplation is silent diving into the restful, devotional, open heart of the words and their being. Just being in the state of contemplation without seeking to understand or get answers. Does anybody want to share on 109? Let me, I can't see hands when I'm sharing my screen. Jay, jump in.
So what occurred to me is that I'm thinking in the English language, and that's what, I know that sounds like a really basic thing to realize, but since spirit doesn't have a language, you know, it's I guess intention or just thought, that it reminded me how much the thinking mind is engaged and that all of it is mind in the language my brain learned. So if my brain is processing English language words, then it's in its intellectual mode. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yes. That's what I came up with for that one.
Thank you. And what I'm going to do now, because we only have 3 minutes left, so I'm going to skip down and open up NTI here. I want to show you something because there was something that a few people seemed, you know, not real happy with, maybe even sometimes slightly distressed with, which is the emphasis that we've seen on not asking questions. So I want to show you what NTI says about asking questions. Let me see if I can zoom this up a little bit so you guys can read it. There you go. You should be able to read that. Now let's see, where did chapter 6 go? Back this way. Chapter 5? Chapter 6, okay. So trust is the answer to the questions upon your faith. As you move forward with me and do all that I ask, you will hear questions within your mind. The questions will come from your own temptation to judge for yourself, which is your desire to exercise your own will, which is the ego. So there we go. NTI is very clearly saying that questions come from the ego. But this is no reason to deny your questions. For the temptation to deny your questions also comes from the ego, who tells you that you are guilty for questioning and that for your questions, you will be judged. I tell you that you are not guilty for anything. I will hear your questions and answer them. Bring them to me in joy and trust, knowing they will be answered. The answer you are given will point you in the direction of all truth, which is love. Do not fear me. I am your answer. I will not judge you because you do not know. I will fill the gaps in your knowledge with all that you seek to know and have answered. So what Holy Spirit is saying here is, if you have a question, bring it to within. And that's really just another form of contemplation, right? So if you have a question, bring it to within. Let your own within shine a light on that answer. And that's how you begin to learn that everything that you need, you already have. It's kind of like in The Wizard of Oz, when you know, the Scarecrow wanted brains, but if you watch The Wizard of Oz, he was the one that was figuring out everything easily. The Tin Man wanted a heart, but he was the one that had the most compassion. And the lion, who did shake a lot, wanted to be brave, but yet he did step forward and do things when they needed to be done, right? Even though he was scared. And in fact, when they went to see the Wizard of Oz, the wizard told them that they already had those things, but then what you don't have, Scarecrow, is a degree and blah, blah, blah. And he gave them little trinkets. But they already had everything they needed, which is what enabled them to get to the Wizard of Oz in the first place. And Dorothy, of course, always had the power to go home. So when a question comes up, instead of asking that question outside of yourself, which continues to teach you that you don't know, ask the question within yourself. And you'll start to find out that there's a lot more knowledge there than you were ever aware of. And that is it for today. So you guys enjoy the next week, and I'll see you next Tuesday night.